The captain raised his head cautiously over the barricade and snarled.
"It's just a little box, sergeant," he snapped. "It's not even as if it could hold one or two men."
"Big pardon, sir,"
said the sergeant, and his face was the face of a man whose world has changed a lot in a few short minutes.
"It holds at least four, sir. Corporal Disuse and his squad, sir. I sent them out to open it, sir."
"Are you drunk, sergeant?"
"Not yet, sir," said the sergeant, with feeling.
"Little boxes don't eat people, sergeant."
"After that it got angry, sir. You can see what it did to the gates."
The captain peered over the broken timbers again.
"I suppose it grew legs and walked over there, did it?" he said sarcastically.
The sergeant broke into a relieved grin. At last they seemed to be on the same wavelength.
"Got it in one, sir," he said. "Legs, hundreds of
Libyan army, a bit of effort." They were just about to knock. All day long the noise of battle raged. This was chronicled by later historians, who went on at length about beautiful women being kidnapped, fleets being assembled, wooden animals being constructed, heroes fighting one another, and completely failed to mention the part played by Rincewind, Eric, and the luggage. The Ephebians did notice, however, how enthusiastically the Tarsortian soldiery ran towards them, not so much keen to get into battle as very anxious to get away from something else. The historians also failed to note another interesting fact about ancient Clachian warfare, which was that it was still at that stage quite primitive, and just between soldiers, and hadn't yet been thrown open to the general public. Basically, everyone knew that one side or the other would win. A few unlucky generals would get their heads chopped off, large sums of money would be paid in tribute to the winners, everyone would go home for the harvest, and that bloody woman would have to make her mind up whose side she was on, the hussy. So Tsortian street life went on more or less as normal, with the citizens stepping around the occasional knots of fighting men or trying to sell them kebabs. Several of the more enterprising ones began dismantling the wooden horse for souvenirs. Rincewind didn't attempt to understand it. He sat down at a street cafe and watched a spirited battle take place between market stalls, so that, amid the cries of "Ripe olives!" there was the screams of the wounded and shouts of "Mind your backs, please! Melee coming through!" The hard part was watching the soldiers apologise when they bumped into customers. The even harder part was getting the cafe owner to accept a coin bearing the head of someone whose great-great-great-great-grandfather wasn't born yet. Fortunately, Rincewind was able to persuade the man that the future was another country. "An lemonade for the boy," he added.
"My parents let me drink wine," said Eric. "I'm allowed one glass."
"I'll bet you are," said Rincewind.
The owner industriously swabbed the tabletop, spreading its coating of dregs and spilt retsina into a thin varnish.
"Up for the fight, are you?" he said.
"In a manner of speaking," said Rincewind guardedly.
"I shouldn't wander around too much," said the owner. "They do say a civilian let the Ephebians in. Not that I've got anything against Ephebians, a fine body of men," he added hurriedly, as a knot of soldiery jogged past. "A stranger, they say. That's cheating, using civilians. There's people out looking for him, so's they can explain."
"Pick me." "You're quite right. It was an entirely voluntary act on my part." A heavy hand dropped onto Rincewind's shoulder. He looked around and up into the face of an Ephebian centurion. A soldier beside him said,
"That's the one, Sarge. I'll bet a year's salt."
"Who'd have thought it?" said the sergeant.
He gave Rincewind an evil grin.
"Up we come, chummy. The chief would like a word with you."
Some talk of Alexander and some of Hercules, of Hector and Lysander, and such great names as these. In fact, throughout the history of the multiverse, people have said nice things about every cauliflower-eared sword-swinger, at least in their vicinity, on the basis that it is a lot safer that way. It's funny how the people have always respected the kind of commander who comes up with strategies like, "I want 50,000 of you chappies to rush at the enemy." Whereas the more thoughtful commanders who say things like, "Why don't we build a damn great wooden horse and then nip in at the back gate while they're all round the thing waiting for us to come out," are considered only one step above common oiks and not the kind of person you'd lend money to. This is because most of the first type of commander are brave men, whereas cowards make far better strategists. Rincewind was dragged before the Ephebian leaders, who had set up the command post in the city's main square so that they could oversee the storming of the central citadel, which loomed over the city on its vertiginous hill. They were not too close, however, because the defenders were dropping rocks. They were discussing strategy when Rincewind arrived. The consensus seemed to be that if really large numbers of men were sent to storm the mountain, then enough might survive the rocks to take the citadel. This is essentially the basis of all military thinking. Several of the more impressively dressed chieftains glanced up when Rincewind and Eric approached, gave them a look which suggested that maggots were more interesting, and turned away again. The only person who seemed pleased to see them didn't look like a soldier at all. He had the armour, which was tarnished, and he had the helmet, which looked as though its plume had been used as a paintbrush. But he was skinny and had all the military bearing of a weasel. There was something vaguely familiar about his face, though. Rincewind thought it looked quite handsome. Pleased to see them was only a comparative description. He was the only one who acknowledged their existence. He was lounging in a chair and feeding the luggage with sandwiches. "Oh, hello," he said gloomily. "It's you." It was amazing how much information could be crammed into a couple of words. To achieve the same effect, the man could have said, "It's been a long night. I'm having to organise everything from wooden horse building to the laundry rota. These idiots are about as much help as a rubber hammer. I never wanted to be here anyway, and, on top of all this, there's you. Hello, you." He indicated the luggage, which opened its lid expectantly. "This yours?" he said. "Sort of," said Rincewind guardedly. "I can't afford to pay for anything it's done, mind you." "Funny little thing, isn't it?" said the soldier. "We found it herding 50 Tsortians into a corner. Why was it doing that, do you think?" Rincewind thought quickly. "It has this amazing ability to know when people are thinking about harming me," he said. He glared at the luggage as one might glare at a sly, evil-tempered and generally reprehensible family pet, who, after years of biting visitors, has rolled over on its scabby back and played at lovable puppy to impress the bailiffs. "Yes," said the man without much surprise. "Magic, is it?"
Yes."
"Something in the wood, is it?"
"Yes."
"Good job we didn't build the sodding horse out of it, then."
"Yes."
"Got into it by magic, did you?"
"Yes."
"Thought so." He threw another sandwich at the luggage. "Where are you from?" Rincewind decided to come clean.
"The future," he said.
This didn't have the expected effect. The man just nodded.
"Oh,"
he said. And then he said, "Did we win?"
"Yes."
"Oh. I suppose you can't remember the results of any horse races," said the man without much hope.
"No."
"I thought you probably wouldn't. Why did you open the gate for us?" It occurred to Rincewind that saying it was because he had always been a firm admirer of the Ephebian political position would not, strangely enough, be the right thing to do. He decided to try the truth again. It was a novel approach and worth experimenting with.
"I was looking for a way out," he said.
"To run away?"
"Yes."
"Good man. Only sensible thing in the circumstances." He noticed Eric, who was staring at the other captains clustered around their table and deep in argument. "You, lad," he said. "Want to be a soldier when you grow up?"
"No, sir."
The man brightened a bit.
"That's the stuff," he said.
"I want to be a eunuch, sir," Eric added.
Rincewind's head turned as though it was being dragged.
"Why?"
he said, and then came up with the obvious answer at the same time as Eric.
"Because you get to work in a harem all day long," they chorused slowly.
The captain coughed.
"You're not this boy's teacher, are you?"
he said.
"No."
"Do you think anyone has explained to him?"
"No."
"Perhaps it would be a good idea if I got one of the centurions to have a word. You'd be amazed at the grasp of language those chaps have got."
"Do him the power of good, I expect," said Rincewind.
The soldier picked up his helmet, sighed, nodded at the sergeant and smoothed out the creases in his cloak. It was a grubby cloak.
"I think I'm expected to tell you off or something," he said.
"What for?"
"Spoiling the war, apparently."
"Spoiling the war?"
The soldier sighed.
"Come on, let's go for a stroll. Sergeant, you and a couple of lads, please."
A stone whistled down from the fort high above them and shattered.
"They can hold out for bloody weeks up there,"
said the soldier gloomily, as they walked away with the luggage padding patiently behind them.
"I'm Laviolus, who are you?"
"He's my demon," said Eric.
Laviolus raised an eyebrow, the closest he ever came to expressing surprise at anything.
"Is he? I suppose it takes all sorts. Any good at getting in places, is he?"
"He's more the getting out kind,"
said Eric.
Right, said Laviolus.
He stopped beside a building and walked up and down a bit with his hands in his pockets, tapping on the flagstones with the toe of his sandal.
Just here, I think, Sergeant, he said after a while.
Right you are, sir.
Look at that lot, will you, said Laviolus, while the sergeant and his men started to lever up the stones. That bunch around the table. Brave lads, I'll grant you, but look at them. Too busy posing for triumphant statues and making sure the historians spell the names right. Bloody years we've been laying siege to this place. More military, they said. You know, they actually enjoy it. I mean, when all's said and done, who cares? Let's just get it over with and go home, that's what I say.
Found it, sir, said the sergeant.
Right.
Laviolus didn't look round.
Okay.
He rubbed his hands together. Let's sort this out and then we can get an early night. Would you care to accompany me? Your pet might be useful.
What are we going to do? Said Rincewind, suspiciously.
We're just going to meet some people.
Is it dangerous?
A stone smashed through the roof of the building nearby.
No, not really, said Laviolus. Compared to staying out here, I mean. And if the rest of them tried to storm the place, you know, in the proper military way.
The hole led into a tunnel. The tunnel, after winding a bit, led to stairs. Laviolus mooched along it, occasionally kicking bits of fallen masonry as if he had a personal grudge against them.
Said Rincewind. Where does this lead?
Oh, it's just a secret passageway to the centre of the citadel.
You know, I thought it would be something like that, said Rincewind. I've got an instinct for it, you know. And I expect all the really top Sortians will be up there, will they?
I hope so, said Laviolus, trudging up the steps.
With lots of guards? Dozens, I imagine.
Highly trained, too.
Laviolus nodded. The best.
And this is where we're going, said Rincewind, determined to explore the full horror of the plan as one probes the site of a rotting tooth.
That's right.
All six of us.
And your box, of course.
Oh, yes, said Rincewind, making a face in the darkness.
The sergeant tapped him gently on the shoulder and leaned forward.
Don't you worry about the captain, sir, he said. He's got the finest military brain on the continent.
How do you know? Has anyone ever seen it? Said Rincewind.
You see, sir, what it is. He likes to get it over with without anyone getting hurt, sir, especially him. That's why he dreams up things like the horse, sir, and bribing people and that. We got into civvies last night and came in and got drunk in a pub with one of the palace cleaners, see, and found out about this tunnel.
Yes, but secret passages, said Rincewind. There'll be guards and everything at the other end.
No, sir. They use it to store the cleaning things, sir.
There was a clang in the darkness ahead of them. Laviolus had tripped over a mop.
Sergeant,
sir,
just open the door, will you?
Eric was tugging at Rincewind's robe.
What?
Said Rincewind testily.
You know who Laviolus is, don't you? Whispered Eric.
Well?
He's Laviolus.
Get away.
Don't you know the classics?
That isn't one of those horse races we're supposed to remember, is it? Eric rolled his eyes.
Laviolus was responsible for the fall of Tassort on account of being so cunning, he said. And then afterwards it took him 10 years to get home, and he had all sorts of adventures with temptresses and sirens and sensual witches.
Well, I can see why you've been studying him. 10 years, eh? Where did he live?
About 200 miles away, said Eric earnestly.
Kept getting lost, did he?
And when he got home, he fought his wife's suitors and everything, and his dear old dog recognised him and died.
Oh, dear.
It was the carrying his slippers in his mouth for 15 years that killed it off.
Shame.
And you know what, Demon? All this hasn't happened yet. We could save him all that trouble.
Rincewind thought about this.
We could tell him to get a better navigator for a start, he said.
There was a creak. The soldiers had got the door open.
Everyone fall in, or whatever the bloody stupid command is, said Laviolus. The magic box to the front, please. No killing anyone unless it's really necessary. Try not to damage things. Right, forward.
The door led to a column-lined corridor. There was a distant murmur of voices. The troop crept towards the sound until it reached a heavy curtain. Laviolus took a deep breath, pushed it aside and stepped forward and launched into a prepared speech.
"Now, I want to make myself absolutely clear," he said. "I don't want there to be any unpleasantness of any kind, or any shouting for guards and so forth, or indeed any shouting at all. We will just take the young lady and go home, which is where anyone of any sense ought to be.
Otherwise I shall really have to put everyone to the sword, and I hate having to do things like that."
The audience to this statement did not appear to be impressed. This was because it was a small child on a potty. Laviolus changed mental gear and went on smoothly. "On the other hand, if you don't tell me where everyone is, I shall ask the sergeant here to give you a really hard smack." The child took its thumb out of its mouth.
"Mummy is seeing to Cassie," it said. "Are you Mr. Beakle?"
"I don't think so," said Laviolus.
"Mr. Beakle is a silly."
The child withdrew its thumb, and with the air of one concluding some exhaustive research, added,
"Mr. Beakle is a poo."
"Sergeant?"
"Sir?"
"Guard this child."
"Yes, sir." "Corporal?"
"Sarge?"
"Take care of the kid."
"Yes, Sarge. Private Archaos."
"Yes, Corp,"
said the soldier, his voice gloomy with prescience.
"See to the sprog."
Private Archaos looked around. There were only Rincewind and Eric left, and while it was true that a civilian was in every respect the lowest possible rank there was, coming somewhere after the regimental donkey, the expressions on their faces suggested that they weren't about to take any orders. Laviolus wandered across the room and listened at another curtain.
"We could tell him all kinds of stuff about his future," hissed Eric. "He had, I mean he will have, all kinds of things happen to him. Shipwrecks and magic and all his crew turned into animals and stuff like that."
"Yes, we could say walk home," said Rincewind.
The curtain swished aside. There was a woman there, plump, good-looking in a slightly faded way, wearing a black dress and the beginnings of a moustache. A number of children of varying sizes were trying to hide behind her. Rincewind counted at least 7 of them.
"Who's that?"
said Eric.
"Ahem," said Rincewind. "I rather think it's Eleanor of Thought."
"Don't be silly," whispered Eric. "She looks like my mum. Eleanor was much younger and was all..."
His voice gave out, and he made several wavy motions with his hand, indicative of the shape of a woman who would probably be unable to keep her balance. Rincewind tried not to catch the sergeant's eye.
"Yes," he said, going a bit red. "Well, you see, you're absolutely right, but, well, it's been a long siege, hasn't it, what with one thing and another?"
"I don't see what that's got to do with it," said Eric sternly. "The classics never said anything about children. They said she spent all her time mooning around the Towers of Thought and pining for her lost love."
"Well, yes, I expect she did pine a bit," said Rincewind. "Only, you know, you can only pine so much, and it must have been a bit chilly up on those towers."
"You can catch your death mooning," nodded the sergeant.
Laviolus watched the woman thoughtfully, then he bowed.
"I expect you know why we're here, my lady," he said. "If you touch any of the children, I shall scream," said Eleanor flatly.
Once again Laviolus showed that along with his guerrilla abilities was a marked reluctance to waste a prepared speech once he had it all sorted out in his head.
"Fair maiden," he began, "we have faced many dangers in order to rescue you and take you back to your loved—"
His voice faltered. "Once, this has all gone terribly wrong, hasn't it?"
"I can't help it," said Eleanor. "The siege seemed to go on for such a long time, and King Morsellium was very kind, and I never liked it much in a Phoebe anyway."
"Where is everyone now, the Sortians, I mean, apart from you?"
"They're all out on the battlements, throwing rocks, if you must know."
Laviolus flung up his hands in desperation.
"Couldn't you, you know, have slipped us a note or something, or invited us to one of the christenings?"
"You all seem to be enjoying yourselves so much," she said.
Laviolus turned and shrugged gloomily.
"All right," he said. "Fine. QED, no problem. I wanted to leave home and spend 10 years sitting in a swamp with a bunch of meat-headed morons. It wasn't as if I had anything important to do back home, just a little kingdom to rule, that sort of thing. Okay. Well, then, we might as well be off. I'm sure I don't know how I shall break it to everyone," he said bitterly. "They were having such fun. They'll probably have a bloody great banquet and laugh about it and get drunk. It'd be their style."
He looked at Rincewind and Eric.
"You might as well tell me what happens next," he said. "I'm sure you know."
Said Rincewind.
"The city burns down," said Eric, "especially the topless towers. I didn't get to see them," he added sulkily.
"Who did it? Their lot or our lot?" said Laviolus.
"Your lot, I think," said Eric.
Laviolus sighed.
"Sounds like them," he said.
He turned to Eleanor.
Our lot, that is my lot, are going to burn down the city, he said. It sounds very heroic. Just the kind of thing they go for. It might be a good idea to come with us. Bring the kids. Make it a day out for all the family, why don't you?
Eric pulled Rincewind's ear towards his mouth.
This is a joke, isn't it? He said. She's not really the fair Elinor, you're just having me on.
It's always the same with these hot-blooded types, said Rincewind. They definitely go downhill at 35.
It's the pastor that does it, said the sergeant.
But I read where she was the most beautiful.
Ah, well, said the sergeant, if you're going to go around reading.
The thing is, said Rincewind quickly, it's what they call dramatic necessity. No one's going to be interested in a war fought over a quite pleasant lady, moderately attractive in a good light, are they?
Eric was nearly in tears.
But it said her face launched 1,000 ships.
That's what you call metaphor, said Rincewind.
Lying, the sergeant explained kindly.
Anyway, you shouldn't believe everything you read in the classics, Rincewind added. They never check their facts. They're just out to sell legends.
Laviolus, meanwhile, was deep in argument with Elinor.
All right, he said. Stay here if you like. Why should I care? Come on, you lot, we're going.
What are you doing, Private Archaos?
I'm being a horse, sir, explained the soldier.
He's Mr. Pooh,
said the child, who was wearing Private Archaos's helmet.
Well, when you finish being a horse, find us an oil lamp. I caught my knees a right wallop in that tunnel.
Flames roared over at Sort. The entire hubward sky was red. Rincewind and Eric watched from a rock down by the beach.
They're not topless towers anyway, said Eric after a while. I can see the tops.
I think they meant toppleless towers, Rincewind hazarded, as another one collapsed red-hot into the ruins of the city. And that was wrong too.
They watched in silence for a while longer, and then Eric said,
Funny that. The way you tripped over the luggage and dropped the lamp and everything.
Yes,
said Rincewind shortly.
Makes you think history is always going to find a way to work itself out.
Yes.
Good, though, the way your luggage rescued everyone.
Yes.
Funny to see all those kids riding on its back.
Yes.
Everyone seems quite pleased about it.
The opposing armies were, at any rate. No one was bothering to ask the civilians, whose views on warfare were never very reliable. Among the soldiery, at least among the soldiery of a certain rank, there was a lot of back-slapping and telling of anecdotes, jovial exchanging of shields, and a general consensus that, what with fires and sieges and armadas and wooden horses and everything, it had been a jolly good war. The sound of singing echoed across the wine-dark sea.
"Hark at them," said Laviolus, emerging from the gloom around the beached Ephesian ships. "It'll be 15 choruses of the Ball of Philodephus next. You mark my words. Lot of idiots with their brains and their jock straps."
He sat down on the rock. "Bastards," he said with feeling.
"Do you think Elinor will be able to explain it all to her boyfriend?" said Eric.
"I imagine so," said Laviolus. "They usually can."
"She did get married, and she's got lots of children," said Eric.
Laviolus shrugged. "A moment's wild passion," he said.
He gave Rincewind a sharp look.
"Hey, you, demon," he said. "I'd like a quiet word, if I may."
He led Rincewind towards the boats, pacing heavily across the damp sand as if there was a lot weighing on his mind.
"I'm going home tonight on the tide," he said. "No sense in hanging about here, what with the war being over and everything."
"Good idea."
"If there's one thing I hate, it's sea voyages," said Laviolus.
He gave the nearest boat a kick.
"It's all idiots striding around and shouting, you know, pull this, lower that, avast the other. And I get seasick, too."
"It's heights with me," said Rincewind, sympathetically.
Laviolus kicked the boat again, obviously wrestling with some big emotional problem.
"The thing is," he said wretchedly, "you wouldn't happen to know if I get home all right, would you?"
"What?"
"It's only a few hundred miles. It shouldn't take too long, should it?" said Laviolus, radiating anxiety like a lighthouse.
"Oh."
Rincewind looked at the man's face.
10 years, he thought, and all kinds of weird stuff with winged wasp names and sea monsters.
On the other hand, would it do him any good to know?
"You get home okay," he said. "You're well known for it, in fact. There's whole legends about you going home."
"Phew." Laviolus leaned against a hull, took off his helmet and wiped his forehead. "That's a load off my mind, I'll tell you. I was afraid the gods might have a grudge against me."
Rincewind said nothing.
"They get a bit angry if you go around thinking up ideas like wooden horses and tunnels,"
said Laviolus. "They're traditionalists, you know. They prefer people just to hack at one another. I thought, you see, that if I could show people how to get what they wanted more easily, they'd stop being so bloody stupid." From further along the shoreline came the sounds of male voices raised in song. "Vestal virgins came down from Heliodeli, Philodeli, Phobos, Chromenos, Meninos, and when the ball was over, there were..."
"It never works," said Rincewind. "It's got to be worth a try, though, hasn't it?"
"Oh, yeah."
Laviolus slapped him on the back. "Cheer up," he said. "Things can only get better." They walked out into the dark breakers where Laviolus's ship was riding at anchor, and Rincewind watched him swim out and climb aboard. After a while, the oars were shipped, or unshipped, or whatever they called it when they were stuck through the holes in the sides, and the boat moved slowly out into the bay. A few voices floated back over the surf.
"Point the pointed end that way, Sergeant."
"Aye, aye, sir."
"And don't shout. Did I tell you to shout? Why do you have to shout? Now I'm going downstairs for a lie down."
Rincewind trudged back up the beach.
"The trouble is," he said, "is that things never get better. They just stay the same, only more so. But he's going to have enough to worry about."
Behind him, Eric blew his nose.
"That was the saddest thing I've ever heard," he said.
From further along the beach, the Ephebian and Sortian armies were still in full voice around their convivial campfires.
"The village harpy, she was there."
"Come on," said Rincewind, "let's go home."
"Another funny thing about his name," said Eric as they strolled along the sand.
"No, what do you mean?"
"Laviolus means rinser of winds."
Rincewind looked at him.
"He's my ancestor," he said.
"Who knows?" said Eric.
"Oh, gosh."
Rincewind thought about this.
"Well, I wish I'd told him to avoid getting married, or visiting Ankh-Morpork.
It probably isn't even built yet."
Rincewind tried snapping his fingers. This time it worked. Astafagal sat back. He wondered what did happen to Laviolus. Gods and demons, being creatures outside of time, don't move in it like bubbles in the stream. Everything happens at the same time for them. This should mean that they know everything that is going to happen because, in a sense, it already has. The reason they don't is that reality is a big place with a lot of interesting things going on, and keeping track of all of them is like trying to use a very big video recorder with no freeze button or tape counter. It's usually easier just to wait and see. One day, he'd have to go and look. Right here and now, insofar as the words can be employed about an area outside of space and time, matters were not progressing well. Eric seemed marginally more likable, which wasn't acceptable. He also appeared to have changed the course of history, although this is impossible, since the only thing you can do to the course of history is facilitate it. What was needed was something climactic, something really soul-destroying. The Demon King realized he was twirling his moustaches.